Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the LA Steel Show. I'm Lila.
And I'm Leo. And tonight we're going to just do a whole lot of news for you.
Well, we're going to start off with some union news.
Yeah.
And just in case you don't know, the Trans-Pacific Partnership and Free Trade Act has been signed.
Disgusting.
But let's hear what people have to say about it. Washington's dirty little trade secret.
The TPP will boost our economies, lowering barriers to trade and investment, increasing exports, and creating more jobs for our people, which is my number one priority. It addresses a whole range of issues not covered by past agreements, including market regulations and how we can make them more compatible. Creating opportunities for small and medium-sized businesses in the growing global marketplace. It will include high standards to protect workers' rights and the environment.
The thing that saved us in this global economic slowdown is in our exports. And what I'm trying to do is increase our exports. And if indeed all the jobs were going to move south because they're lower wages now, and they haven't done that. And so I have just negotiated with the President of Mexico the North American Free Trade Agreement and the Prime Minister of Canada, I might add. I want him more of these free trade agreements because
sure
export jobs are increasing far faster than any jobs that may have moved overseas. That's a scare tactic because it's not that many. But anyone that's here, we want to have more jobs here. And the way to do that is to increase our exports. Some believe in protection. I don't.
As China's citizens experience economic gains, so will the American firms that trade in their expanding markets. China's progress towards prosperity and accession into the WTO will create new opportunities for American businesses and farmers.
First, I believe that Chairman Greenspan has established a pretty good record for knowing what is in America's economic interest. He has once again reiterated clearly and unambiguously that this agreement exchanges membership rights for China in the WTO for economic opportunities for America in China, for American businesses and American workers. So economically, the case is clear and compelling.
From aerospace to electronics, it will increase our manufacturing exports to Korea, which already supports some 200,000 American jobs and many small businesses. In particular, manufacturers of American cars and trucks will have much more access to the Korean market. We'll encourage the development of electric cars and green technology in the United States, and we'll continue to ensure a level playing field for American automakers here at home. In short, the tariff reductions in this agreement alone are expected to boost annual exports of American goods by up to $11 billion. And all told, this agreement, including the opening of the Korean services market, will support at least 70,000 American jobs.
Today we have the chance to do what our parents did before us. We have the opportunity to remake the world.
Well, that is going to cost us billions and billions and billions
and
trillions of jobs.
Workers speak out about. Those are the people that are implementing it. This is workers speaking out now.
TPP está siendo negociado a puerta cerrada.
TPP could mean more corporate influence over my government's economic policy.
TPP could mean that I feel less secure.
TPP could mean that global corporations pit worker against worker in a race to the bottom.
TPP nos haría más difícil organizar a los trabajadores.
Make it harder for workers.
TPP could mean fewer work opportunities for local residents.
TPP significaría menos dinero para
cubrir las necesidades de mi familia.
TPP significaría
more expensive medicine.
TPP could mean companies write my country's food labels and safety standards.
TPP significaría comida nociva y contaminación
ambiental. Environmental contamination.
TPP is a trade and globalization agreement between 12 countries. Even after negotiations were finished, more countries could join. TPP could make it harder to organize workers.
TPP could mean deforestation.
TPP could mean more overfishing.
The fishing people will not be here, and the water will not be here.
Your voice will not be heard.
TPP could mean we lose our voice.
Workers' rights, environmental protection, access to medicine. We urge you to ensure that the agreement will be balanced and centered on people's needs, not simply the needs of corporations.
TPP is going to happen.
TPP va a pasar.
TPP is going to happen unless you do something about it.
TPP será una realidad, no
hace falta. Reality.
Done.
Oh, it has not been signed. I thought it was.
It has been signed?
No, it hasn't. The TPP has not been signed, and we don't think that anybody should give in.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, geez, that changes everything, Lila. Okay.
I thought it said it had been signed. I misspoke. I apologize.
Yeah, so let's try to avoid getting this, and let's talk to our senators, congressmen, and say, don't sign, don't let the TPP go through.
I mean, why should you believe the promises that these politicians have spoken? Because you know that the other trade agreements have only hurt you.
Yeah.
It hasn't made...
This one's going to be a boner, I'll tell you. This one's going to kill you. Right.
And certainly it hasn't increased wages of the ordinary people.
I love this. There's a couple of things here. Tonight, there's one more. There's an article here about whistleblowers. Silencing whistleblowers, Obama style. The Obama administration has just opened a new front, an ongoing war against whistleblowers. It's taking its case against one man, former Transportation Security Administration, TSA Air Marshal Robert McQueen, all the way to the Supreme Court to hold on, because we're going back down the rabbit hole with the most transparent administration ever. Yeah, right. Despite all the talk by Washington insiders about how whistleblowers like Edward Snowden should work through the system rather than bring their concerns directly to the public sphere, McQueen is a living proof of the hell of trying to do so. Through the Supreme Court, the Department of Justice wants to use McQueen's case to further limit what kinds of information can qualify for statutory whistleblowing protection. If the DOJ gets its way, only information that the government links is as appropriate, a contradiction in terms when it comes to whistleblowing could be revealed. Such a restriction would gut the legal protection of the Whistleblower Protection Act can have a chilling effect on future acts of conscience. Having lost its case against McQueen in the lower court, the DOJ is seeking to win in front of the Supreme Court, if heard by the Supremes, and there's no guarantee of that. This would represent that body's first federal whistleblower case of the post-9/11 era, and if it were to rule for the government, even more information about an out-of-control government executive branch will disappear under the dark umbrella of national security. On the other hand, should the court rule against the government or simply turn down the case, the whistleblowers like McQueen will secure a little more protection than they've had so far in the Obama years. Either way, an important message will be sent at a moment when revelations of government wrongdoing are moved from the status of obscure issues to front page news. The issues in the McQueen case, who is entitled to whistleblower protection, what use can be made of retroactive clarification to hide previously classified information, how many informal classification categories the government could create bureaucratically, and what role the Constitution and Supreme Court have in all this. An arcane and complex, but stay with me, understanding the depth to which the government is willing to sink to punish one man who blew the whistle tells us the world about Washington these days. And they say the devil is in the details.
Okay. The CBC urges Kellogg to immediately end lockout of workers. The Congressional Black Caucus has joined the growing chorus of national and international voices urging the Kellogg Company to end its four-month-old lockout of more than 220 workers at a Memphis, Tennessee plant. The bakery, confectionery, tobacco workers, and grain millers, local 252G members, who make Frosted Flakes and Fruit Loops and other breakfast favorites, were locked out as part of the drive by the company to replace steady, middle-class, full-time jobs with casual, part-time employees who would make significantly lower wages and substandard benefits. In the letter to Kellogg's CEO, John Bryant, Representative Marsha L. Fudge, Democrat from Ohio, the CBC chair writes, many of the affected workers are second and third generation employees from predominantly minority communities, averaging more than 20 years of service to Kellogg. Locking employees out, cutting off their health insurance, denying them payment of earned vacation, and subjecting them to months without income are not the actions the CBC believes are reflective of the Kellogg Company's vision and purpose. I guess it is, though. They did it. The CBC urges Kellogg to immediately end the lockout that is inflicting pain on the workforce, their families, and the entire Memphis community. We encourage you to work with the local to find a mutually agreeable solution that will keep your production facility functional and ensure your employees have the ability to provide for themselves and their families. The workers have received support from national politicians, religious leaders, civil rights organizations, international labor groups, including the NFL Players Association, the International Union of Food, Agricultural, Hotel, Restaurant, Catering, Tobacco, and Allied Workers Association, the National Action Network, and others. The AFL-CIO endorses a nationwide consumer boycott of American Crystal Sugar in response to Crystal Sugar's 14-month lockout. That's amazing, a 14-month.
Yeah.
They're just trying to break unions. The AFL-CIO endorsed a nationwide consumer boycott of American Crystal Sugar products to begin Monday, October 15th. In response to Crystal Sugar's 14-month lockout of its workers. I don't really know what happened there.
It doesn't finish?
No, the workers have been locked out since August 1st.
Hmm.
So they had a 14-month lockout.
Wow.
That's pretty awful.
Yeah.
So that's an effort of a lot of companies to break unions.
Yeah. I get something here.
And replace them with part-time workers. These are full-time workers replaced by part-time workers.
Wow.
And that just really just sucks.
Situation. RT anchor resigns on air. I can't be part of network that whitewashes the actions of Putin. I find that interesting.
Hmm.
A Russian TV anchor announces on the air Wednesday that she would be resigning from the network. Liz Wall said she would no longer be part of a network that whitewashes the actions of Putin. Inspired by off-script remarks, Tuesday by RT anchor Abby Martin condemning Russian action on Crimea. Wall admitted today that she has many ethical and moral challenges to wrestle with in continuing to work for the state-owned television network. After talking about her own family history and she heard of the ultimate price that people pay for this country, Wall announced she would be stepping down, effective immediately.
What was she an anchor on?
On RT.
Russian TV.
I cannot be a part of a network funded by the Russian government that whitewashes the actions of Putin. I'm proud to be an American and believe in disseminating the truth. And that is why, after this newscast, I'm resigning. And here's her statement here. So I guess Putin, I guess they whitewashed Putin like they whitewashed Obama here, you know.
Last night, RT made international headlines, and one of our anchors went on the record and said Russian intervention in Crimea is wrong. And indeed, as a reporter on this network, I face many ethical and moral challenges, especially me personally, coming from a family whose my grandparents came here as refugees during the Hungarian Revolution, ironically to escape the Soviet forces. I have family on the opposite side, on my mother's side, that sees the daily grind of poverty, and I'm very lucky to have grown up here in the United States. I'm the daughter of a veteran. My partner is a physician at a military base where he sees every day the firsthand accounts of the ultimate prices that people pay for this country. And that is why, personally, I cannot be part of a network funded by the Russian government that whitewashes the actions of Putin. I'm proud to be an American and believe in disseminating the truth, and that is why, after this newscast, I'm resigning.
Wow, good for her.
Wow.
Well, she came with
propaganda.
She came during the Hungarian Revolution. I went to school with kids.
Yeah.
Well, I went to school with people who did.
Yeah.
The ITV studio, the company that produces Cesar Millan's new show, Cesar 9/11, for the National Geographic Wild, just this week reported that in 2013, they posted a 27% increase in profits. ITV studio says it expects to continue raking in more profits in 2014. The Writers Guild of America East recently conducted a survey that indicates that ITV studio, like many other reality and nonfiction production companies, has been generating these profits while refusing to pay overtime to the producers and writers on this show. By not paying overtime, ITV Studio has been able to keep an average of $30,000 per year for each producer they employ. ITV Studio isn't the only violator. But as one of the more successful and profitable production companies in New York, and one where writers and producers have chosen to unionize, they should be setting a good example for the rest of the industry to follow. Millan can help by standing up for the legal rights of his producers and associate producers to be paid overtime and publicly supporting these workers. So it's happened in the movie business too, folks. It's not just the people that work at McDonald's, it's everywhere. They're always trying to break unions, trying to prevent people from getting what's due to them.
Yep. And we got one here. Here's what the headline unemployment rate is hiding. The headline unemployment rate, intended to provide a snapshot of the health of the labor market, has become increasingly misleading over the past few months. Weak payroll growth and a rapid reduction in the labor force participation rate has superficially deflated the headline measure, which fell 0.1%, 0.1 percentage point to 6.6% in January, according to the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics. This is lower level of unemployment since October 2008, but at 63%, the labor force participation rate is down substantially from a pre-crisis average of 66%. Moreover, payrolls grew by just 113,000 in January and by 75,000 in December. The data suggests that the decline in headline unemployment has been caused by labor force attrition, not by payroll growth. A flat and relatively low hire rates supports this theory. The preliminary hire rates are 3.2% in December, down 3.3% in November, and below a pre-crisis average, lower to 3.9%. It is hard to pinpoint exactly what is causing the weakness in the labor market. The most accurate diagnosis is likely a mix of forces, but there is some evidence that one of the contributing factors is structural. According to the BLS, the job openings rate has increased fairly consistently throughout the recovery, suggesting that businesses are looking for new employees. In December, the preliminary job openings rate was 2.8%, down slightly from 2.9% in December and November, but still near point crisis highs at a seasonally adjusted 4 million in December, and the total number of job openings in the U.S. was cut off its post-crisis high in November. And there's more to this, but if you want to go to this, go to Cheat Sheet, all right, and check it out there.
Teachers want more accountability for charter schools. AFT and in the public interest launched a new website Thursday, Cashing In on Kids, to track charter schools and the private companies that often run them for a profit basis. The two groups argue that corporate-run charter schools are doing a bad job of serving students and that there is little accountability for these companies. In particular, the website will keep track of K-12 Incorporated, academics, Imagine Schools, Charter Schools USA, and White Hat Management. AFT, that's the American Federation of Teachers, President Randy Weingarten says, "This is the simple exercise of following the money. How many times do people simply get up on a pedestal and say we care about kids, and then you realize that they care about profits, they care about tax deductions, they care about privatizing the public system? If accountability and transparency should go all the way, let's look at accountability and transparency in terms of charter schools, not just in terms of public schools. The website will track each of the companies collecting news, official sources, and investigations into the corporations and how they run the schools they operate." On a conference call with bloggers, Weingarten says the AFT isn't opposed to charter schools in theory, but the evidence has shown that the schools run by these companies, in particular, are failing to live up to the promises they have made to students and their parents. "I'm not anti-charter, and there are many people that run a great charter school, but there are also people within the so-called charter school movement who are really all about profiteering. The website also will highlight charter schools that engage in good practices. If we can see thoughtful education practices, effective schools, it's not simply a matter of focusing on the negative. If there's a positive, you focus on that too. If you're interested, you can learn more by visiting Cashing In on Kids website or on Twitter or Facebook."
All right. Discover who and what is really causing the Ukrainian crisis and prodding the U.S. and Russia towards war. This is a fascinating article by Chris Bowman, and I urge everybody to go check this one out. Chris Bowman is a well-traveled writer and investigative journalist who has done extensive research in the event of September 11th, yeah, and the conflict in the Middle East. But the interesting thing with this article is that he cites the Israelis, all right,
uh-huh,
for their
fermenting
of this, right.
I had heard that, too.
Right.
I've read it.
Yep. And the political, this is a request, instrumental. Senator John McCain, the leading supporter of the Zionist war agenda in the U.S. Congress, talks to Arseniy Yatsenyuk, the new provisional prime minister of Ukraine, who happens to be Jewish, and Ole Tayabok of the neo-Nazi Savoda Party in the Ukraine in December 2013. Isn't it odd that a Ukrainian Jew and a neo-Nazi would be working so closely together?
Or is it really? They both have the same, that's what they did in Russia.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, that's not odd. They did that in Russia and Germany.
Yeah. And so Ole Tayabok says a Moscow Jewish mafia rules Ukraine and that Germans, kikes, and other scum want to take away our Ukrainian state. The 2005 Tayabok, a trained medical doctor, co-signed an open letter to the President Yushchenko calling for a parliamentary investigation into the criminal activities of organized Jewry in the Ukraine. And, yeah, so it turns out that the Israeli platoon leader Delta, one of the leaders of this Svoboda mob of anti-government protesters in Delta, an Israeli veteran of the IDF, a Javadi infantry brigade, according to a report from the Jewish Telegraphic Agency, Delta, an Orthodox Jew in his late 30s, headed a force of 40 men and women, including several fellow IDF veterans, in violent clashes with government forces. As platoon leader, Delta says he takes orders from activists connected to Svoboda. I don't belong to Svoboda, but I take orders from their team. They know I'm Israeli, Jewish, and ex-IDF soldier. And Delta says he has frustrations relating to being an outsider. Sometimes I tell myself, what are you doing? This is not your army. This isn't even your country. And the crisis in Ukraine is so very serious matter that pits the United States against Russia. While we don't know how the crisis will end, we certainly know how it started and who has guided it to its dangerous point. In order to grasp what was going on in Kiev, we need to understand who is pulling the strings in the so-called Euromaidan protest and who has been appointed to the head and unelected provisional government of the Ukraine. I happen to have been reading Douglas Reed's excellent historical analysis of Zionism, the controversy of Zion, during the time which was witnessed the regime change in Ukraine. The regime change, which has been forced on the people of the Ukraine by violent protesters in Kiev and the capital. And he goes on to talk about this book. But the incredible thing is the Judah wrote a 2009 article for Zurb, Ukraine, the Rise of the Ukrainian Jewish connection is so very, very strong. And talks about how they're playing right into the hands, in the great conflict. So you might want to go to that, ChristopherBullen.com. Check this article out. Very interesting. One more article before I go to break, which has nothing to do with that, but has everything to do with Connecticut. Okay? And my friend Mark Weiss, send this over to us.
Call the Cops, America's most trusted source for public information.
Connecticut halts plans to round up firearms after finding that most cops in the state are on their list.
Well, they would keep weapons.
Well, Connecticut has been making new news due to their hastily passed gun registration laws. According to some sources, as few as 15% of gun owners have actually registered their firearms. News blogs have been warning state police officials are talking about mass confiscations of unregistered firearms. Well, plans for these confiscations hit a snag when legislative intern dared to ask a question. Who will be going door-to-door to take the guns away? Asked a 21-year-old college senior. According to reportedly, multiple people in the room in the most sarcastic voices they could muster said, "The police." Well, the unnamed intern then pointed to the list and said, "My dad's name is on the list, and he is the police chief." I see three other names on this list of family members, all cops. within hours, a print of all sworn law enforcement officers in the state was obtained, and comparisons of the list of gun owners who failed to comply with registration requirements and sworn LEOs showed a startling figure. Just over 68% of Connecticut cops have failed to register firearms, according to the new law.
They're not going to give up their arms.
No. An anonymous source in the government office said lawmakers were dumbfounded. Someone suggested firing all the cops who failed to register. But the reality of hiring and training that many new police officers is not practical. The source goes on to say, Senator...
redacted to protect his
source. Okay. Said maybe we should issue an official order to all cops to comply with registration or face termination. I mean, seriously, these people are a special kind of stupid to think that gun-loving cops are going to go along with this blatant violation of the Second Amendment. So now Connecticut is in a little quagmire. The powers that are making all kinds of threats, but there is no one to follow through on the threats. No police officers or police administrators are willing to go on record for this story. Emails to members of the Connecticut Legislature and Governor's Office were not returned by the time of publication.
No, they're not going to agree with that.
No.
Most of those guys all hunt. Down my managers into subtasks and time and motion studies. are used to find the quickest way to perform each subtask. Workers who don't perform these subtasks exactly as management tells them to are reprimanded. Employees are monitored for time and effort, not just on the assembly line, but also on movement between the line and shelves that contain books and packing materials. Any deviation from the expected pattern is punished. Managers consistently increase unpacking, movement, and repacking targets, sometimes doubling them without explanation or warning. Employees who get too many points for failing to meet targets are fired. Older or less dexterous employees who are often unable to keep up with the ever-increasing targets are reportedly fired. Packers are tagged with personal satellite navigation computers that tell them the best routes through the warehouse to make sure they meet their quotas and to keep track of whether or not they meet those quotas. Managers send packers threatening text messages if they get behind schedule, telling them to speed up or face the consequences. Workers are forced to walk across massive warehouses, some like one in Arizona, as big as 28 football fields. Some employees report having to walk 13 to 15 miles a day. In most countries, employees have no independent voice, such as a union or work council, to stand up to management abuses. Packages are required to meet targets for weight and to be packed the one best way, according to management. Foremen act as overseers of the packing lines, often looking over workers from an elevated platform. That's horrible. Sounds like picking tobacco. Workers are reprimanded for talking to each other or taking a moment to rest after a tough packing job. Managers record back packers' bathroom breaks and question them if they didn't go to the nearest bathroom to their spot on the line. Employees work shifts that are often in excess of 10 hours at a time with minimal breaks. Workers often have to get down on hands and knees hundreds of times a day to meet massive packing quotas that require packing an item every 30 seconds. Employees are forced to go through checkpoints with scanners to make sure they aren't stealing anything. Checkpoints leading into the cafeteria often get clogged, and lunch breaks can get cut from the standard 30 minutes to only 20 minutes. Packers at a UK location were provided with cheap, ill-fitting boots that made them get blisters. Many locations use temporary workers who are paid less, given no benefits, and fired almost at will. At one point, Amazon in Germany hired a security firm to harass temporary workers living in a company-owned dormitory. At one location in the United States, warehouse temperatures rose to more than 100 degrees with no relief in terms of lower work targets, air conditioning, or even open doors to allow circulation. The local hospital stationed an ambulance outside the warehouse because so many workers succumbed to those conditions.
So much for Amazon.
Yeah, I think it should be boycotted.
Wow, I would think so. I didn't know they were that bad.
It's a high-speed, high-tension workshop, sweatshop.
Wow.
The sweatshop.
Best. So, you know, forget about Amazon, folks. I mean, it's a sweatshop. Wow.
A worldwide sweatshop. And now we have one in Connecticut.
No, that's just weird. Well, you know, we're going to turn this around just a little bit. You know, for anybody who's drinking, who's eating, who has a fluoride toothpaste, or a glass of, or drinks a glass of water every day, all right, with fluoride in it. Well, it turns out that one serving of toothpaste contains 0.22 milligrams of fluoride. Our poison control authorities tell us, call poison control if swallowed. That's
wow.
Right on your toothpaste thing, all right? And it says, one glass of tap water contains 0.21 milligrams of fluoride. Our health authorities tell us, drink 8 glasses per day. Imagine
that?
They're overdosing on the fluoride. Both toothpaste and tap water contain fluoride from the waste systems of the phosphate fertilizer industry. These chemicals, 90% of which are sodium fluorosilicate and fluorosilicate acid, are classified as hazardous waste contaminated with various impurities and known to cause cancer, infertility, brain degradation, and bone loss. Still want to trust your government with your health? I don't think so. Right? Yeah. So, drink 8 glasses of fluoridated water a day. All right? Isn't that amazing? Or one serving of toothpaste can you call a hospital? Yeah. Unbelievable. So say you die with this stuff. They're just killing you. Nature doesn't make bad facts. Nature doesn't make bad fats. Factories do. Right? Good fat versus bad fat. Butter is good fat. Tallow is good fat. Lard is good fat. Palm oil, coconut oil, avocado oil, and olive oil. Bad fat, which is produced by factories. Canola oil, soybean oil, sunflower, corn, safflower, grain, grape seed, and margarine. Nature doesn't make bad fats. But, you know what? I've heard all of a sudden bad stuff about palm oil, bad stuff about coconut oil. You know, everybody is knocking all the natural oils because, guess what, folks? They want you to eat the crap, okay? Safflower, corn oil, sunflower oil, soybean oil, canola oil, and margarine, of course, which is made in factories. Oh, well, let's go to the, I'm very interested in what's happening with the gun control bill in Connecticut because, you know, it affects so many people. But, this thing is nuts. Fed up Navy veteran who warned Connecticut lawmakers on gun registration. He said, I'm telling you right now, I will not comply. Now that tens of thousands of gun owners in Connecticut are in direct violation of hastily passed gun control law, a video of a fed-up Navy veteran warning lawmakers that he will not comply with the law is just going viral. As previously reported by The Blaze, as many as 100,000 gun owners technically became felons overnight because they chose not to register their semi-automatic rifles and or high-capacity magazines. A man identified as John S. Sink reportedly appeared at a public hearing in North Haven, Connecticut on April 22, 2013 to confront lawmakers over the gun control law. Sink stated as by asking if the bill would have done anything to prevent the tragic Sandy Hook shooting. Eventually, Connecticut State Rep. Yarkano replied, maybe not. Well, Sink went on to ask what the state plans to do with residents who will not comply to this law. And that's up to you. That's your right, Yarkano said. And in as far as Sandy Hook, we do not know if it would have made a difference. But we also have an obligation to do our best to protect public safety. That's when Sink went off, causing the room to erupt in applause. He said, I am a 30-year-old public servant, 20-year career veteran, okay? U.S. States Navy veteran, upstanding citizen in all my life, 3 children, the stroke of a pen from the ivory tower with the gold top. You've decided to create me to be a felon, a Class D felon for doing absolutely nothing wrong. He also warned lawmakers that gun control advocates would not simply stop at gun registration. You probably really think that they're going to stop. I'm telling you right now, I will never vote for any of you again. I'm done, he added. But let me just play this.
guys can listen to the audio part.
I hear what he said. It's kind of interesting. Because this is what's happening in Connecticut right now.
I believe that being $20, not $35
is the MO. Go ahead, sir. Hi, my name is John Stinkway. I live in Brantford. Anything in this bill would have prevented Sandy Hook? I'm just curious in your opinion.
I suggest to you, will they try to pass more gun legislation next year? No guarantees, but I don't think so, because we've done something on it. We have. And that happens a lot of time, capital. When there's a controversial issue and you tackle it, it tends to go away. It just, that's just the way it is. But I can't make any guarantees, but I will tell you, this, that the taste for it is not going to be there. This came, San Diego was a big issue. Everyone will tell you. And what was happening up there was good. That didn't matter to us. What mattered to us was what we were going to do in terms of protecting gun owners. So you're not here saying, Len, it's unfair that we're paying this much in taxes. It's unfair that every gun I own, I have to register every single year. And when you argue, is that unconstitutional? I don't know. Obamacare, they say that legislators can tax up the wazoo, and it's not unconstitutional. That's what the Supreme Court
said. Yeah, but my Second Amendment is in the Constitution. It's a right, not a driver's license, worth a privilege. Healthcare is not a right either.
But
we are talking about a right which shall not be infringed.
And it's been ruled that a permit for a handgun can require a license. That's why you get a permit for a handgun. You can't have a handgun and walk around town unless you have a permit. And that has always been
the state
of Connecticut, because it is protected, because your First Amendment rights are protected. Including the Second Amendment, is protected, but there's reasonable, in the Heller case, there are reasonable restrictions to that they can do. This was
just the whole Colton Scalia would be nice. Just they really like to cherry pick the Heller case, but
right.
But Scalia also said we have the right to be equally armed against as far as what the police and the military carry in a small arms unit, whatever the police department carries. Scalia was very specific in the Heller case. That is what we should be able to arm ourselves as civilians. But I really like to cherry pick that you can have certain restrictions on the Second Amendment. Let's do the whole, let's have the whole thing.
And you can in your house. We're not changing.
Oh, no, but no. But I have to get fingerprinted, registered, go to the state police. Please. Nobody here is being police. I'm not being police. I want to speak for nobody else. Me, most people. I don't want to take on too long because I don't do my part. But I'm telling you right now, I will not comply. There you go. I'm not complying. You're saying you're talking. I don't want to speak for
you. When you join the Navy, now you join the Navy. You get a fingerprint.
Yes.
You get a fingerprint, you get it back.
Yes.
So there.
And I was something else when I went in to protect the Constitution against all enemies, foreign, domestic. I got domestic enemies now. They show their hands every day. Okay? Other people are going to show up.
Countries invaded by the U.S. in the last 20 years.
Yeah, that's surprising.
And Russia does it, and everyone loses their minds. I thought that was interesting. And the U.S. has over 1,000 military bases around the world. You know that?
No.
In case you didn't already know, Russia is defending Ukraine from having a U.S.-installed president. Ukraine is still a part of Russia. The United States are only interested in a strategic outpost and to interfere with Russia's gas line network that feeds Europe via the Ukraine. Euro countries are only interested because they want to install an EU-friendly government who will line their coffers. Isn't that amazing?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And look at the United States track record for invading countries. You ready for this?
Go ahead.
Grenada, 1983 to 1984. Bolivia, 1986. Virgin Islands, 1989. Liberia, 1990. 1997 and 2003. 5. Saudi Arabia, 1990 to 91. I don't even remember that. Do you remember we invaded Saudi Arabia?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Kuwait,
I remember, 1991. Somalia, 92 to 94, 2006. Bosnia, 1993. 9. Zaire, Congo, 96 to 97. 10. Albania, 1997. Sudan, 1998.
I didn't know we invited Albania.
I didn't either. I mean, 12. Afghanistan, 1998 to 2001. All right, and even up and now, up till now. Yemen, 2000 to 2002, and on. Okay, up till the present. 14. Macedonia, 2001. 15. Colombia, we did in 2002. 16. Pakistan, 2005. 17. Syria, 2008 to 2011 to the present, in the present, in Syria. 18. Uganda, 2011. Mali, 2013. Niger, okay, 2013. 20. Yugoslavia. Did you know we hit Yugoslavia?
Yep.
1919, 1946, 1992, 1994, and 1999. I was aware of 1999. Yeah, and 21, Iraq, 1958, 1963, 1990 to 91, 1990 to 2003, 1998 to 2003 to 2011, and 22, Angola, okay, 1976 to 1999. Jeez, imagine that.
Huh.
I bet you didn't know that. Oh, man. Oh, you know, I thought this was very interesting, you know, since we're talking about news. But Radio Shack is closing 1,100 stores.
Wow.
Did you know that? Yeah. Radio Shack said Tuesday that it plans to close up to 1,100 stores, or about a fifth of its U.S. locations. The news came as the retailer reported a wider quarterly loss than a disappointingly hot holiday season, and its stock stumbled 16% in the afternoon trading. Isn't that amazing?
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, Radio Shack reported a full-year loss of $400 million, or 3.97 cents per share in a year. It lost $139.4 million, or 1.39 per share, and it adjusted loss to 3.4 per share. I mean, it's just going under. So they're closing down 1,100 stores. That's something. Yeah. When was the last time we bought anything at a Radio Shack?
Oh.
A couple of years. You know, after only when the
When our cat chewed through
all of our computer cords and everything, we were able to get something from them. But anyway, let's kind of go out with a quote here from Bansky. I don't know if anybody knows who Bansky is. Are you familiar with him?
No.
Well, he's the guy who does all the graffiti all over the walls.
Oh, yeah.
The greatest crimes in the world are not committed by people breaking the rules, by people following the rules. It's people who follow orders that drop bombs and massacre villages. That's very true. Not true.
Mm.
Now, here's something that Lila done, and I'll end tonight with this quote by Ann Coulter. It says, "You want a higher minimum wage? Turn off the spigot of low-wage workers pouring into the U.S., and it will arise on its own through the iron law of supply and demand." I have to agree with her on that. I really do. That is that importing of low wage earners, you know, that they're doing through visas,
yeah,
and they're doing through amnesty and all of that stuff, and that's what they're doing. And it's really causing a real problem. So anyway, that's our show tonight. I want to thank everybody for joining us, and hope you enjoyed it.
Yeah, good night, folks.
Good night.
Have a good night.